Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Kincaid, Cerberus MC, Book 1, by Marie James. Narrated by Aaron Shedlock and Kasha Kensington. Prologue. Kincaid.
Weapon!
I hear one of the SWAT guys in front of me yell. The sound of weapons discharging rings out, lasting mere seconds. I'm fourth in line behind three Denver Police Department SWAT officers, which means we split off in all directions once we cross the threshold into the dank, dark home. The smell inside is putrid and makes me immediately feel the need to shower. Most meth houses are like this, and I cringe knowing that a child has been living in these conditions. One officer begins checking pulses on the three individuals in the living room. Another officer splits off into a bedroom to clear the closet, and the third clears another bedroom, leaving me with the kitchen. I can easily tell there are no other visible threats, but a sound from behind a closed door draws my attention. With my M4 at the ready, I turn the doorknob and tug the door open. Holy fuck, I gasp when I see a woman curled up on the floor of the tiny closet. Josie? Jocelyn Bennett? I say, doing my best to gain some composure.
Yes,
she mutters weakly. I would have never told Caleb this, but I was certain we'd find Josie dead if we ever found her body at all. My chest constricts the way it always does when a situation turns out opposite of how I imagined it. Absolute, pure joy is what I'm feeling at the moment. But my face falls when I see the condition she's in. She's not out of the woods yet.
Girl, we've been looking for your ass everywhere.
I can hardly contain my joy at knowing my cousin will not have to deal with the death of the woman he loves.
Jesus, didn't know I was in the closet?
She asks with a hoarse voice. Jesus. She's delirious, no doubt from being starved and hogtied in here for weeks. You being here is a miracle, darling, but this ain't heaven. My name is Diego Anderson, and I have a cousin that's going to be beside himself, knowing we found you. I can tell she's trying and failing to open her eyes against what has to be blinding light for her.
Caleb,
she whispers, and I can see the tremble of her lip. I step out of the way as the SWAT team leader enters the room. I leave the room to head outside, planning to call Caleb, but I find him standing in the hallway, looking into one of the bedrooms. He's sobbing uncontrollably, having no concern for the tears rolling down his face. I walk up and clasp him on the shoulder. Caleb, I whisper, trying to get his attention. She's asking for you, man. He turns so quickly toward me, he nearly loses his footing. I look past him and wince as a clearly deceased woman comes into view.
What?
He asks with a slight shake of his head. Josie, man. I tell him gently, pulling him from the doorway and down the narrow hall.
Keep your shit together in there, Caleb. She's been through hell, and looks it. I warn him. But you have to keep it together, man.
He nods as he makes his way into the crowded kitchen. At the sight of her, curled up on a filthy blanket just outside of the door, he gasps, both in relief and torment from seeing her like this. I keep my hand on his back until he crouches down beside her.
Caleb,
I hear her whisper.
I'm here, Josie.
He returns, leaning in to kiss her forehead. Short of her never being abducted in the first place, this is the best outcome anyone could have ever asked for.
Chapter 1. Emmeline. I'm trying to be as quiet as I can, but I can't keep the hiss from slipping past my lips as I wrap the thick, elastic bandage around my ribs. I should probably go to the hospital, but I know there's nothing they can do about ribs even if they're broken and not just severely bruised. They don't hurt as bad as they did last time, and I know it would only mean more trouble for me if I alerted anyone to my injuries. Using makeup too dark for my complexion, I apply liberal amounts around my eyes and my left cheek. I get better at this part each time I upset my husband. I wish I could figure out a way to keep from making him angry, and I wouldn't have had to watch YouTube videos on how to cover bruises and the proper way to breathe with broken ribs. It's a very sad day when society has such problems that necessitate videos for abused women. It makes me wonder what women did decades ago when they didn't have the wonderful internet to help them. I do my best to cover the gash on my swollen lip with lipstick and think about what caused this latest episode.
Care to explain this?
Bobby asks, holding up a small envelope. I'm very familiar with the tattered container. My heart immediately begins to pound in my chest as my steps falter. I just got out of the shower, and the only protection I have from what I'm certain is going to be a horrible beating is the thin towel I have wrapped around my body. My eyes cut to his and back to the evidence in his hands. That envelope contains every penny I've been able to hide from him the last 2 years that I've been working at Drifters. It's not as much as one would think, considering I've been stockpiling for what seems like forever.
Explain!
He shouts, waving the $523 in front of me. I'm saving for your birthday, I respond quickly, and cringe when I realize my mistake.
My birthday was last month, you stupid bitch!
He pockets the money, seething with anger. His first strike is a closed fist to my mouth. I inch myself closer to the mirror to inspect the shield I have to use more often than not. I'd been saving that money to finally leave him for good. He's alienated me from my entire family. Well, I only have a few cousins left. My parents have been gone for years, and I'm an only child. I have no one. He's made sure of that. At only 24 years old, I'm a shell of the person I used to be. I've been in this situation so long I don't remember the last time I woke up feeling safe or without worry of being hurt before the sun set again. I met Robert Mikhailson at a party my junior year in high school. He spent the next couple of years alienating me from my friends and family. By the time I graduated high school, he'd moved me out of Utah away from my cousins and the aunt who took me in after my parents died. I haven't spoken to them since. 6 years we've been in Colorado. 6 years he's been all that I know. It's exactly the way he wants it. Like he always does after an incident at the house, Bobby is sitting in the corner of the bar watching my every move. His mood seems better now than it does most nights, and I know that's because he's drinking away the $500 I'd been saving. I'll never see a penny of it. I guess I should count my lucky stars that he didn't hurt me as bad as he could. It's certainly not the worst punishment he's doled out over the years. I don't even want to think about the time he did actually break my ribs. That pain was beyond excruciating. I know his excitement over having a wad of cash to spend played a large part in the lesser sanction. I keep the fake smile on my face as I make my rounds in the bar, filling drink orders and delivering them. I quickly dash away thoughts of starting my nest egg back up, but the insidious thought keeps filling my head. I know I have to leave. I know eventually he'll kick me in just the right spot, and I'll never be the same again. Or I'll end up dead. I've been hopeless for so long that the possibility seems more like a fairy tale than a feasible outcome. Praying he dies in a car accident hasn't worked, no matter how many times I've begged God to take him away. I went to the police once. Once. That was all it took for me to realize that the fat guy working the front desk had no desire to help me. That cry for help landed me in the hospital for 3 days under the guise of falling down the stairs at the apartment complex. The doctors didn't believe me, but were too busy to dig any deeper. Thank God they didn't, or I'd be dead right now. Dead. Doesn't seem like such a bad thing as I walk around barely able to take a deep breath with the pain I feel on the right side of my body. Steel toe boots, I've discovered, are no match for bones. I can't hide the genuine smile on my face when the bikers walk through the front door and make their way to the back corner table. There are 4 men rather than the usual 3. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't hoping the 3 guys would show up tonight. Well, Two of them, anyways. The third guy is kind of a creep. But the other two are super sweet and easy on the eyes. I work my tables quickly so I can make my way to them. I'm certain their order will be the same as it's been the last couple of weeks. But I go to them to verify since they have an addition to the group this evening. I stop short when I get close to the table. Shadow and Kid, as they introduced themselves a few weeks ago, are very good-looking guys. The man with them tonight? I don't know that I've ever seen such a beautiful creature before. Tattoos cover both arms from the wrists, disappearing under the sleeves of his t-shirt. His baseball hat does nothing to hide his soulful brown eyes and perfectly pouty lips. Lips that are turned up in a knowing smirk as I make my way to their table. I steal my expression immediately. He has "bad boy" written all over him. I cut my eyes to the table where Bobby is sitting. Thankfully, his face is turned up watching something on the huge TV on the wall. I pray these guys behave tonight. This is the first time they, along with my husband, have been here together. They haven't been inappropriate by normal standards, but Bobby's standards aren't normal. He's a wuss when it comes to confronting other men, so any perceived transgression will be taken out on me. Of that, I'm certain. "Hey, guys," I say with a smile as I near the table. "What can I get for you tonight?" Although the smiling stranger remains silent, I can feel his scrutinizing gaze on my face. I cut my eyes to him. Biggest mistake I could have ever made. Once my eyes meet his, I'm locked in place, and I can't look away. It's as if I'm entranced, and it's up to him to give me permission to break my gaze.
"Don't worry, honey,"
I hear one of the guys say, breaking the trance. I look over and see that it's the creepy one who spoke.
"All of the ladies react that way when they see Prez."
Creepy guy slaps the tattooed bad boy on the back. Prez. My eyes cut to the patch over his heart on his worn leather vest. President. I blush at being called out for my apparent appreciation of the leader of their group.
"Enough, French,"
the president chides.
"Hey, darling,"
he says with a mischievous smirk that makes my stomach flutter. "Course," I ask, hoping for a quick escape. Anything to get away from this man and the mouth that my eyes can't seem to tear themselves away from.
"Please,"
the president says, drawing my attention back to his pouty lips. I clear my throat, spin around, and leave the table. What the hell is wrong with me? I give Bobby a quick glance. Thankfully, his eyes are still glued to the TV. Not once have I ever even thought about cheating on Bobby, and I'm not thinking about it now. But there is just something about that man that has me interested. I would never cheat. It's not a moral issue for me at this point, but rather a means of survival. Bobby would put the last nail in my coffin if he even suspected the thoughts I just had over that stranger's mouth. I give my head a slight shake and head to the bar to fill their drink order. I have a bad feeling about tonight, and my gut instinct is usually right on track.
Chapter 2. Kincaid. A celebration. That's what's going to happen tonight. Josie has been found. She's not in the greatest of health, but the doctors say she'll make a full recovery. My cousin doesn't have to suffer the loss of the woman he loves. Today's a great day. One I didn't think could get any better. That was until I walked into Drifter's Bar. The guys have been talking about the hot waitress for weeks now. I'm here to have a few beers, but a scenic view in the form of a good-looking woman is always a plus. We make our way to the back corner of the bar. The best strategic location to keep an eye on the entire situation. Diligence, even in a social setting, is what keeps a man safe. They don't even have to point her out. I could have picked her out of a lineup of 100 good-looking women. Good-looking? The phrase doesn't even do her justice. She's gorgeous. I'd say perfect when looking at her long blonde hair and full breasts, but she seemed a little sad when I look into her dark, blue eyes. I follow her with my eyes as she takes orders and delivers drinks in the 15 minutes that it takes her to make her way to our table. I can't help but smirk when she stops cold the first time her eyes land on me. Yeah, yeah, sweetheart. It's just a pretty face. She seems to gain control of herself again and walks to the table with a smile. I can tell she's having a hard time keeping under control.
Hey, guys, what can I get for you tonight?
The voice of an angel, if I've ever heard one. I watch her, taking in every inch of her face. I notice it all. The cut on her lip, the heavy makeup she's using as an attempt to hide something. Closer inspection tells me she's not just the sadness I saw in her eyes. She's broken. A tortured soul. My fucking kryptonite. I nearly lose my breath when she turns her eyes and focuses her attention on me. If my mom could see me now. A big badass biker, former Marine, getting lost in the blue eyes of a woman in a bar. On the periphery of consciousness, I hear Wrench say something idiotic beside me, then feel him slap me on the back. The action snaps me back into the present. Enough, Wrench, I mumble to the fellow biker, the one who never keeps his fucking mouth shut. Hey, darling, I drawl at the siren standing in front of me. Her cheeks flush, and I notice the incremental shift of her feet.
Course?
Her voice is more of a squeak this time. She's clearly affected by me as well. Something that for once makes me smile. I'm no stranger to women. They flock to me wherever I go. I'm not a narcissistic asshole who thinks he's God's gift to women. It's just a fact. Women find me attractive. It has its benefits. Most are looking for a good time, a story to tell their friends later about how they hooked up with the president of an MC. I generally keep my extracurricular activities closer to home, in a setting I'm more easily able to control. But every once in a while, I find something that's hard to turn down. It seems tonight is one of those nights. Please, I say with a seductive rasp. She turns quickly and saunters away. My eyes follow the sway of her hips, and I can tell she's not doing anything to purposefully entice me. But entice me she does. I clear my throat and adjust my crotch. A quick glance at Shadow lets me know I've not been as nonchalant about the encounter as I would have hoped. He leaves it alone. Wrench, on the other hand, he doesn't know when to keep his mouth shut. I told you she was a hot piece of ass. He sniffs and runs his arm under his nose. Disgusting. He waggles his eyebrows in the direction she went. I'm gonna get me a piece of that before we leave Denver. Are you blind, you stupid fucker? Shadow asks. She clearly has her sights set on Kincaid. Wrench pulls his attention from the petite, curvy waitress getting our beers from the bar and looks at me. His face falls when I raise my eyebrow at him. That's fucked up, he grumbles, crossing his arms over his chest like a petulant child. I chuckle. It's an unspoken rule that the president gets first pick. It's not a card I pull very often. Usually I'm not interested in anything Wrench would want, but this fine specimen is on my radar. Shadow laughs softly and claps Wrench on the back. Better luck next time, man. I tap my fingers on the tabletop and watch her. She continues to cut her eyes to a guy sitting alone along the far wall of the bar. He's engrossed in the game on the TV, but the way she looks over at him bothers me. I can tell she's concerned, either about him being there or seeing something he shouldn't.
When are we heading out?
Shadow asks, diverting my attention momentarily. I shrug. Day after tomorrow, maybe. I wanted to stick around for a bit. Make sure Caleb doesn't need anything before we hit the road. I narrow my eyes, thinking about the whole situation we were called into, and how everything doesn't line up like it should.
I know that look. I turn my head toward Shadow. You can't stop thinking about the leak in the department.
I grin, only because the waitress is making her way back to us. That's Denver PD's problem, unless they call us in to investigate. And I don't see that happening anytime soon. I watch her eyes as she hands the guys their beer and looks down to take my beer from her. My face falls when it lands on the gold band, on her left ring finger. She leaves as soon as she arrived. She's fucking married, I say with bitterness in my voice. Ranch claps his hands together and rubs them vigorously, like he's won the fucking lottery. He, unlike me, doesn't have an issue with going after married women. No, I say to him. Leave her the fuck alone.
But you don't do married women,
he seethes. Leave her the fuck alone. I mean it, Wrench. He narrows his eyes at me, but keeps his mouth shut. He knows he's on thin ice and better not push his fucking luck. I tip my beer up and take a long pull, my eyes evaluating the guy across the bar. I can't help but wonder if he's the one who busted her lip. It's highly likely. He looks like the type of asshole that would hit a woman. I despise men who hit women. They are the absolute scum of the earth. Knowing I need to divert my attention away from the waitress for more than one reason, I scan the bar. My eyes land on a redhead sitting on a stool at the bar. She's facing outward and staring right at me. From the way she's running her tongue over and around the tip of her beer bottle, I can guarantee she'd be down for just about anything, which means she's my kind of girl. I wink at her to let her know I see her and go back to talking to the guys at the table. Kid, I say, catching his attention. Why the sour look? Dustin Kid Andrews is the newest and youngest member of the MC. At 24 and having served 3 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan in the first 4 years of his adult life, he's seen more devastation and death than most men twice his age. The great thing about Kid, though, is he always has a smile on his face. He always sees the bright side of things. Right now, that character's smile is nowhere to be seen. Wrench laughs and Kid shoots him daggers from across the table. He got blue-balled last night. I tip my beer up, emptying it to hide the smile on my face. Wrench is cackling like the idiot he is, but Shadow has enough respect to hide his laugh behind a cough. Well, I finally manage. It's a new night. No reason not to try again. I turn to Shadow. And Misty? Misty is the woman he's been seeing casually since we got to Denver. She's also the woman who called in the tip about Josie when the little girl reported a woman being held by her parents at the school Misty works at. I'm grateful for Misty, which means I'm for once grateful for Shadow's inability to keep his dick to himself. This time it worked in our favor. He shrugs his shoulders noncommittally. We're leaving in a few days. It's his only explanation, and I know that's all I'll get from him. Shadow treats every woman he comes across like a princess. But when he's done, he's done. He likes to spread the love around. I force my eyes to keep from following the waitress, but it's appearing to be an impossibility since she's walking toward us now. The smile she pulls from me is unintentional, but painted on my face nonetheless.
Another round?
Sure, I say, just as Wrench reaches for and clasps her hand. Her eyes sweep from their connection to me, and then to the side, where I assume her husband is sitting. No doubt that asshole is the one hurting her. I have to remind myself to mind my own business. I can't save every woman. Hell, I couldn't save the one I love from birth, and certainly I can't save someone who has no will to save themselves. Wrench, I chide. Leave her the fuck alone. I keep eye contact with her when I speak, but I can tell Wrench has let her hand go.
Thank you,
she mouths. I nod at her as she walks away. I take a chug from my beer and glare at Wrench. If you can't learn how to behave in public, I'll make sure you never join us on the road again. He huffs, but is smart enough not to say a damn word. Rather, he stands and makes his way to the opposite end of the bar, to the line in front of the jukebox. Remind me again why that fucker is still around, I mutter to Kid and Shadow. You promised Socket you'd look after him, Shadow responds. Fucking Socket. His ass should be here right now, rather than his dumbass brother. I finish my second beer and stand, giving the redhead near the bar the look I know she gets often. I wrap my knuckles on the tabletop and head toward the restroom. Shadow laughs. Kid grumbles something about blue balls. I would laugh, but I find nothing funny about being 30 years old and walking to the bathroom of a shifty bar to get my dick sucked. as ridiculous as it is, I'm certainly not going to leave here without it happening. For the first time in as long as I can remember, I miss the girls back at the club. I haven't touched a woman the entire time we've been in Denver. I've spent every waking moment looking for Josie. Now that she's been found, I can't wait to blow down someone's throat. And since the waitress is married to an asshole, the redhead will have to do. I meet the redhead at the center of the bar and drape my arm over her shoulder, turning her in the direction of the restroom sign, hanging over an entryway at the back of the bar. Her hand is on my cock before we even make it 5 steps. I sigh inwardly at the double standard. She's a bar slut, which makes her unappealing to me outside of this situation. But on the other hand, I'm grateful she is because it's exactly what I need at the moment. We won't exchange numbers. I won't even tell her my name. And the fucked up part? She probably won't even ask. I'd be surprised if my dick is the only one she touches tonight. We round the corner, turning down the dark hallway, and my ears register the sound of the slap before my eyes manage to tell my brain what is going on. I see the waitress's head swing to the side from the impact and look at the sneer on the face of the asshole that was sitting in the bar earlier. The exact one I'd assumed was her abusive asshole husband. Fury boils in my veins. The redhead on my side becomes inconsequential as I stride forward and punch the prick directly in his nose. The blood spray from his face isn't satisfying enough, so I hit him again and again. I don't stop until he's a whimpering puddle, crouched on the filthy floor. I hear screaming and turn to comfort the waitress, pissed that she's upset that I hit him. But when I turn around, it's the redhead I was with a minute before that's hysterical. I watch her back as she runs from the hallway. I turn my attention to the waitress, who is leaning against the wall with a hand clamped over her injured cheek. "You okay?" I ask, taking slow, measured steps in her direction. She pulls her eyes from the man on the floor to mine, and then back down to him. I see the fear the second it hits her face, and I hold my hands up and take a step back. I'm pissed that she'd be afraid of me too, but understanding of the situation. "I'm not going to hurt you, darling." I drop my hands to my side and attempt a casual, non-threatening pose, which is a chore because of my size and build. Without taking her eyes from him, she says, "He'll kill me for sure now." She raises her eyes to mine at the growl that came unbidden from deep in my throat. "He won't have the chance." I reach for her and guide her by her elbow to the rear exit off the dark hallway we're standing in. She seems dazed, and I look over at her, wondering how much damage he caused when he struck her. The cool night air that hits us seems to pull her from her trance.
What are you doing?"
she asks as the door to the bar and the noise of the jukebox closes behind us. "Getting you out of here," I tell her, and point to my bike parked near the street. "Get on." I swing my leg over the seat, hit the kickstand with the back of my boot, and wait impatiently as she stands there looking at me, like she's never seen a man on a bike before.
Chapter 3. Emmeline.
"Get on,"
he repeats. My head is spinning, and my brain can't even piece together what just happened in the back hallway. I knew the minute that creepy biker grabbed my hand, I was going to have to defend my actions to Bobby. I hate working at this bar. It has gotten me hit more times than I care to count. Bobby insists I work here because he likes having the cash from my tips in his pocket every day. I voiced my opinion once about working in a cafe or restaurant because patrons are less grabby when they're drinking coffee or soda and not beer and hard liquor. That suggestion ended with 2 black eyes and instructions to never bring it up again. Apparently, I'm decent-looking and make more money with the drunk guys. I also pay dearly for their actions because of the situation I'm thrown in every night. My entire life is lose-lose at this point. I don't want to die, and I'm certain that's exactly what will happen if I stay here. That reasoning is how I justified getting on this motorcycle with a man I know absolutely nothing about and wrapping my arms around his waist as he tore out of the parking lot. I don't know how long the reprieve from Bobby.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?